The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And the youth camp is now underway here at Edstone. I think the final total was somewhere around 33 young people. Last time I heard, there were still one or two more to arrive. They may well be here by now. But it's an exciting time. We had orientation last night. They're getting underway with activities today. For me, it wasn't all that long ago that I was at these camps at headquarters in Edmond, Oklahoma. There's something suddenly that made a big difference in my life. So it's great to see more and more young people coming and having the opportunity to have that experience. Mr. Flurry has been doing a lot of speaking already. He spoke last night at orientation and again this morning with the first Bible class. So he's asked me to cover today's show. And there's certainly a lot of news to talk about. But I'd like to start by coming back to something I spoke about. I thought it was last time I was on here. It's actually about a month ago, about a potential huge piece of news building, and that revolves around a new round of sanctions on Russia that seem set to go into effect from the US. And these sanctions are very significant because they could really force or expose a divide between the United States and Europe. Once in several generations kind of shift in world order. Europe being allied with the United States, that's been one of the biggest unique characteristics of the post-World War II world. These two powers both being kind of part of the West, both almost being by default, at least Western Europe, on the American side. And this kind of American-dominated world and this Western alignment, it's led to the greatest period of peace in the history of Europe. If you look at what kind of counted as peace in Europe before the post-World War II age, you had, for example, the 100-year period of 1885 until 1914, that kind of Pax Britannica. But even then, you had France invading Spain, Russia and Turkey fighting, various German states getting together and fighting with Denmark and Austria and France, Britain and Turkey fighting Russia, Greece fighting Turkey. And that's not even the internal conflicts, uprisings, declarations of independence, political unrest. Even Switzerland, a country well known for its peace and staying out of wars, managed to have a civil war during that period. So what we've seen in the post-World War II world, that kind of world order, is very unusual for Europe. And from the United States' point of view, Europe being aligned with the United States, it's one of the most important characteristics of the current world order, of the way things are for the United States to preserve. I think I've read some of these quotes before, but here's what some of America's kind of top thinkers on international relations have said about this. Professor Nicholas Spikeman, writing in his book, The Geography of the Peace, he wrote, "Our constant concern in peacetime must be to see that no nation or alliance of nations is allowed to emerge as a dominant power in either of the two regions of the old world from which our security could be threatened." And those two regions that he was referring to was Europe on the Atlantic and East Asia on the Pacific. So America's constant concern in peacetime must be to see that no nation or alliance of nations is allowed to emerge as a dominant power in Western Europe or in East Asia. And that's been the case for a lot of the post-World War II world. You had the Soviet Union, but Europe and East Asia were split. You had in the Western Europe, you had Europe being allied with Western Europe being allied with America and Japan being allied with America. So no great power was able to gain a monopoly or gain dominance in the whole of those regions. And now we're seeing that changing. Really, in a lot of ways, it's a bigger shift than the fall of the Cold War that we're watching undergo now. Or the fall of the Soviet Union, sorry, the fall of the Berlin Wall. Well, actually, in a lot of ways, it's a continuation of the fall of the Berlin Wall, Europe emerging as a power in its own right. Hans Morgenthal, another very famous international relations thinker, he wrote that any alliance between Germany and Russia, so again, a Germany that's not beholden to the United States, that's separated from the West, an independent alliance, if they ally with Russia, well, he wrote that that's a drastic change in the distribution of world power. And as we'll talk about in a minute, that's something that we're seeing emerge right now. Spykman, he warned that the lack of a unified power or Europe or in East Asia is an absolute prerequisite for the independence of the New World and the preservation of the power position of the United States. So it's something that has major implications for America. Robert Kaplan, he wrote that already one can see that the more united Europe becomes, the greater its tension with the United States. A true European superstate with armed forces and a single foreign policy at its command would be both a staunch competitor of the US and possibly the dominant outside power in the equidistant zone of southern South America. So, again, you're seeing as Europe allies, they're becoming separate from the United States, a development we've not seen in 70 years, going their own way, and that's something that could seriously threaten the United States. And this is what we're moving into, this new world order, a different world to the one that we've lived to. The past conditions that have, or the last 70 years, they've been very peaceful, at least when it comes to the United States. Now, of course, there have been hundreds of wars, and when you consider things like Mao Zedong and his killing of his own people in China, the wars that have involved India, really the post-World War II era has not been peaceful for most of mankind, but it has for the United States. And this is changing. And this is where the sanctions that are being considered by the United States come in. They could help change that. Or actually, more accurately, those sanctions could expose the changes that are already happening. So it's a story with huge implications and one that's not getting a lot of coverage, these sanctions. So on Tuesday, the House passed what's called the Countering Iran's Destabilizing Activities Act of 2017. So this is the bill. This is a bill very similar to the one that made it through the Senate by about, it was 97 votes to 2 back in June. The House has decided that they need to do their own bill because they say, well, we need the House control spending. And so they passed their own bill, 419 votes to 3. It's likely that the Senate will vote on it within the next month or two. And again, they voted on the last one, 97 to 2, so they're going to approve it. And you know, that 419 votes to 3, that's a bit bigger than a two-thirds majority. So this is a bill that's veto-proof. Mr. Trump, of course, he could veto it as it comes around and then just have that overridden by Congress, so he's probably not even going to bother vetoing. So this new act coming through with massive support. But this act, it's called the Countering Iran's Destabilization Activities Act. It's about a lot more than Iran. The real kind of meaty, controversial part of this means placing a lot of big sanctions on Russia's energy. It could also mean, the big thing is it could mean sanctions for European companies that do deals with Russia. And the law, the sanctions, would catch Europe in the middle. Because Germany especially have wanted some independence from America, they don't want to be kind of locked into being perpetually allied to the US. They've been doing deals with Russia, and they've been drawing quietly closer to Russia in some significant ways, publicly, and they still support the sanctions that America's put in place against Russia. They're very outspoken about Ukraine, but at the same time they keep very significant ties open, and especially when it comes to Russian energy. And this is very important for Russia. Senator McCain, I think, put it, Russia is a gas station masquerading as a country. Russia derives a lot of its power from its dominance in energy. It has cut off all gas in the middle of winter to nations that have crossed it, cutting off people's heating, essentially, in the cold of the winter. That's a pretty potent weapon. But then also, you know, be nice to Russia, have a foreign policy Russia likes. If you're in Eastern Europe, you'll get cheap gas. Start making Russia unhappy. Even if you don't trigger a complete shutdown, your gas prices are going to start to go up. And Germany's been making itself a partner in Russia's energy dominance. It built the Nord Stream pipeline. Now it's working on the Nord Stream pipeline 2 that take gas directly under the Black Sea to Germany. And this is something I talked more about on that program a month ago, where basically, on the one hand, Russia benefits here because it turns its gas weapon into a precision weapon. At the moment, or before the German pipelines, if it cut off energy to Ukraine, it was cutting off energy to all the countries downstream from Ukraine as well, which wasn't great for it because it meant they lost money not just from Ukraine, but they lost all these other countries' money because they obviously they're not going to pay for gas that they're not getting. But now it makes it much easier for them to just target one country. And Germany, on the other hand, well, then they start to get the same power that Russia has over their downstream allies. But it also means them drawing closer to Russia. They've not burned all their bridges, and they've still got an option that's independent from the United States. They're not locked into depending on the US. And a lot of Eastern Europe and Central Europe is not at all happy about this. The Poles call the Nord Stream pipeline the Molotov-Ribbentrop 2 pipeline. Last time I was on talking about this, I quoted an article from Ambrose Evans Pritchard calling it a bizarre 1939-style pact that has Germany and Russia working together to dominate Eastern Europe once again. Well, this pipeline and these energy deals are what could get caught up in American sanctions. These sanctions would threaten, at least in terms of the draft forms. I'm not sure if the final deal, the final law is public yet, but they give the president the option of putting sanctions on any energy companies or any energy projects that have over 30% of Russian investment. So it could put sanctions on European energy contracts, European energy companies that work with Russia. And so these energy companies that are building the Nord Stream 2 pipeline could face sanctions from the United States. And Europe is not at all happy about this. And over these sanctions, these particular sanctions, they're increasingly taking Russia's side. Jean-Claude Juncker, one of the European presidents, he warned at the G20 summit in July that Europe might retaliate. And even on Wednesday, yesterday, he said, "If our concerns are not taken into account sufficiently, we stand ready to act appropriately within a matter of days." The EU Observer wrote, "A leaked internal memo this week indicated the Commission might seek to circumscribe US jurisdiction on the issue or to impose counter-sanctions on US firms." Juncker said the EU was fully committed to previous Russian sanctions, but that the new US measures could have unintended unilateral effects that impact the EU's energy security interests. The EU Observer goes on to write, "His words were echoed by Berlin, whose plans to build the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline with Russia could be in jeopardy if the US measures go through." But think about how remarkable this is now. You've got the US and the EU threatening to impose economic sanctions on each other. Even a year or two ago, something like that would have been unthinkable. How big is the divide between them that they're threatening each other with sanctions? Now, and I said at the root of this is not necessarily this new round of sanctions that's coming from the Congress. It's more the way that Europe is trying to have some kind of relationship with Russia. And so it's not necessarily that these sanctions are causing the divide, but they are exposing this divide and perhaps even making it worse, perhaps pushing Europe more towards Russia. But look at where we've come in terms of Europe always being allied with America, it just being kind of taken for granted. They're all part of the West. And that's really been the world order since World War II. And now you've got both sides talking about sanctions and Europe saying, well, we might impose sanctions on US companies. Ambrose Evans Pritchard writes that Berlin and Brussels have threatened retaliation if Washington presses ahead with penalties on anything like the suggested terms, marking a dramatic escalation in the simmering transatlantic showdown over America's extraterritorial police powers. He writes that the wording of the US legislation is so broad that it could sweep up dozens of firms in different ways. The measures could impact a potentially large number of European companies doing legitimate business, said the European Commission. A showdown with the US over this particular issue would deepen what is already a dangerous line of cleavage. It would further undermine emotional and political consent for NATO in Washington at a time when the security guarantee is already in peril. He quotes Professor Alan Ridley from the Institute for Statecraft saying, "Nobody wants to end up on the wrong side of a sanctions list. The mere prospect is enough to shut down financing, even if the power is never actually used." So even if this law and in its final form ends up just giving the president the ability to impose sanctions, even if he never actually uses it, just giving him that ability, it's going to make investors say, well, I don't know whether we want to invest in German energy companies anymore, in Austrian energy companies anymore. And it's almost the same effect as putting sanctions on. They start pulling out of all dealings with European energy companies. So we're seeing the potential for just a major escalation now between Europe and Germany. Between Europe and the United States, between Germany and the United States. That's one half, really, of the subject I want to spend today's program talking about. This new world order, if you like, to use a term that gets lots of hits if you stick it in a title, usually. This new alliance system, the post-World War II world that we're seeing develop. We're seeing this great split building between Europe and the United States, and we're going to see that replaced by some new alliances. We'll take a quick break now. When we come back, we'll talk about some of these new alliances that are forming in this post-World War II world.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. Other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power block of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? What does this mean for you? Biblical prophecy provides a remarkable, penetrating preview of Asia's future. Request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. This book exposes in startling detail what Russia and China are doing and will do, and how they will affect your life. Also, you'll be sent a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet looks at today's headlines through the clear light of Bible prophecy. The Trumpet will keep you up to date on the continuing rise of the powers in the East by taking a hard look at today's news and comparing it to the prophecies of the Bible. The Trumpet magazine is this world's most informed news magazine. To learn more, request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. Act today and request Russia and China in Prophecy. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, which is what you're listening to, not the latest superhero blockbuster, as you might have been led to believe by the soundtrack from that ad. Certainly an epic one, but a very good advertisement for an epic book, really. Now, before the break, we were talking about the major divide building between Europe and the United States and how that could be made worse. But now we'll take a look at some perhaps surprising new alliances that Europe is making. Real Clear World had an article yesterday titled, "China's Europe Game Should Worry the United States." And in this article, they write, "It was not long after U.S. President Trump's disastrous trip to Europe in May that Chinese President Lee King-Kwang, probably butchered that, made his own journey to Brussels. Recently, Beijing has taken action to strengthen its trading relationship with the European Union and to cooperate with Brussels on other issues, including climate change. The timing of these endeavours is not a coincidence. China appears to be looking to exploit the growing rift in the transatlantic relationship to forge closer ties with Europe and to improve its own status on the world stage, a triangulation strategy of diplomacy. So China sees that Europe and the United States are moving further apart, and they're looking to get in there, to fill in that void, to be the new partner of Europe, to form a new world order where instead of you have it dominated by the West, you have this European and Asian alliance. And so Europe's moving away from the United States and closer to China. This article continues, at the moment there remains apprehension and skepticism in Europe regarding closer ties with China, and trade disagreements between Beijing and Brussels probably will not disappear anytime soon. Nonetheless, the United States should pay attention to China's rhetoric and action regarding Europe. President Trump's America First principle is not resonating with Europeans, and China's attempting to present an alternative message that appeals to Europe's trade and climate agendas. If Beijing and Brussels forge a closer relationship, it would inevitably be at the expense of the United States. So if these two powers draw closer together, it's going to be the US that loses out. They write that the European Union is China's largest trading partner, with roughly 1.6 billion of goods and services moving between the two mega economies. Not every year, not every month, not every week, 1.6 billion every day in trade between these two. This trading relationship has been contentious at times, and they go on and talk about some of those rifts and different disagreements. And they're right on that, and we'll talk about where this is leading soon. And when we get into some of that background about where this is leading, you'll see that that does imply that there will be some tensions. I think what is happening here really is China kind of wants Europe to be a junior partner in its economic system, and Europe is not at all keen on the idea of being a junior partner. And so, yes, there'll be some tension, but that'll be tension while they're drawing together. Tension about what this overall partnership looks like, not whether this partnership should exist. Going back to this article a bit further down, it writes, Beijing has strengthened its economic bonds on the continent, most notably in Central and Eastern Europe with its controversial Belt and Road Initiative and with 35 billion euros of foreign direct investment heavily concentrated in Western Europe. Disagreements between Europe and China will not reverse this trend, nor will they dismantle the growing interdependency between the two economies. So it used to be America and Europe whose economies were just seemed really closely intertwined. Now on a political and economic level, you're seeing China come in there. This article continues, China is also capitalizing on the protectionist rhetoric emerging from the United States to paint itself as a defender of global free trade, a message that resonates in Brussels. As I've mentioned, really both of these powers are being very hypocritical. America talks about protectionism while probably being the most open and free of the three of them. And then these two powers both talk and praise free trade while both being significantly protectionist. And that's something we've talked about before, but it's still a sign of these two growing closer together. Going back to this article, they write, we've talked about some of that like I said, from the European perspective, the United States is isolating itself from the global trade regime and international order it built and defended for decades. So we're seeing, as we talked about at the start, changes in the international order that has existed for decades. Multilateralism is at the heart of the European project and is the European Union's primary tool for pursuing its priorities on the world stage. The fact that China hosts the world's largest population and is the world's second largest economy, in addition to the country's growing influence in geopolitics, makes it an attractive partner. The same Trump administration policies that are driving a wedge in the transatlantic relationship are also creating space for greater cooperation between Europe and China. It goes on to quote German Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel, who made a trip to China recently, where he said in times in which others pivot to nationalist isolation and advance protectionist tendencies, China and Europe stand for an open global trade and for multilateralism. And this article, it looks like Cory Cooper was the author there at, I can't remember the exact name of the think tank or the academic agency. As I said, it's published by Real Clear World. He concludes, the United States can ill afford to lose Europe to China. America has already strengthened China's geostrategic position in Asia by withdrawing from the Trans-Pacific Partnership and giving Beijing the opportunity to pursue its own trade deal in the Pacific region. The last thing the United States should do is facilitate China's endeavors in Europe. While America's increasing isolation is largely self-inflicted, it will be accelerated and exacerbated by partnerships forged in its absence. Historically, Europe has been an instrument in advancing America's political, economic, and security interests abroad. And that's what we've been talking about in the first half. You go back decades, and Western Europe has been a staunch supporter, been in the same camp as the United States, and that is changing. If Berlin's courtship of Brussels is successful, however, Europe may hesitate to support US actions that could damage its burgeoning ties with China. America will need the backing of its traditional European partners in possible future crises, such as a trade war with China or a conflict in the South China Sea. Yet a Europe that is less inclined to act in favor of US interests will make America weaker and more isolated and could encourage a more confident and stronger China on the global scene. And so, yes, that's exactly what we're seeing. In the past, it might take it for granted that if there were a trade war between Europe, US and China, Europe would be on America's side. You can't take that for granted anymore. That's not the case anymore. But really, I think the danger is even bigger than this article outlined. This is about a shift in the world order that has seen the US safe and prosperous for 70 years. And this isn't the only recent article on this subject. And I'm sure if you've listened to the show regularly, you remember previous articles. It's something that is in the news a lot. But just another one from just this week from the Financial Times on June 24th. Why China invests more in Europe than in the US. And it talks about how China's outward direct investment in the US and Europe is notable for its size and geopolitical implications. But it talks about how much more of its investment has been going to Europe. They write that economic factors only partially explain the differences in foreign direct investment from China. Political sensitivities play a significant role. Chinese companies are more attracted to Europe, again, because their industrial structures are more complementary. In addition, the EU is more receptive to such investment. So you're seeing these growing economic ties. So that's kind of one strand we see building of this new world order. But China isn't the only power that the European Union is drawing closer to. The EU and Japan have recently agreed on the outlines of a new trade deal. Officials from the two powers, they announced that on July 5th. And now this deal isn't completely finalized. They've got kind of all the details to figure out. And they can be quite complicated, but they've got the outline there. Vox News, they wrote that Japan and Europe have a pointed message for the US. We're taking your place as global leaders in free trade. And so now you also see Europe and Japan working on an alliance as an alternative to the US-led world order. The Economist wrote that they now both want to show that they can fill the vacuum left by America's withdrawal under Mr. Trump from its role as the world's trade leader. So they're looking to fill the vacuum as well. And if you look at the combined size of the economies of Japan and the European Union, that's similar to the size of the North American Free Trade Area. So this makes this one of the biggest and on par with the biggest trade areas in the world. It's a massive new trade bloc forming. Before Japan had planned to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But then Mr. Trump pulled out, and Vox News wrote that Japan has made a clear pivot towards Europe. They quote Edward Alden from the Council of Foreign Relations, writing, I have no doubt that the final rounds were accelerated to try and conclude the deal as quickly as possible. So they're working on this fast. It's a priority. as quickly as possible and send a message that the EU and Japan are prepared to lead on trade even without the US. The fact that it was concluded right before Mr. Trump's first G20 summit is a symbolic poke in the eye to the Americans. Vox writes, this isn't a purely symbolic blow to the US's reputation as the world's foremost proponent of free trade. This deal means that European and Japanese exporters will gain an edge over American exporters in each other's markets. It's a real loss for American agriculture in particular, which already has huge inroads in Japan and could have seen them expand under the TPP. But in addition to that, Japan and Europe's negotiations will also mean they are in an unrivaled position to shape the future of trade. They they quote from Caroline Freund from the Peterson Institute of International Economics, talking about that as Japan and Europe work out their standards that they're going to use to trade together, that they'll get to be the rule setters, setting the standard for global trade arrangements. So we're seeing this new economic trade relationship that's going to set standards for the whole world, that's going to play a dominant role in the whole world. And that's the role that the US used to play, and the role that is fading. So we see the US and Japan, or the EU and Japan, working together on being leaders of the free world and leaders of free trade. And just another more recent development in this that we're seeing is that on July 17th, Japan and Germany signed a defense cooperation pact. So Japan is interested in buying more German weapons. Germany is interested in selling them. Deutsche Welle wrote that Japan is trying to build a much broader and diverse range of multidimensional partnerships with numerous other countries. So that was them quoting from Gary Malloy, an associate professor of international relations at Dato Bunker University. The Deutsche Welle writes that traditionally Japan's defense partner for the last 70 years, so again another shift in the way the world works and the way the world has worked since World War II, Japan's defense partner for the last 70 years has been the US, and Tokyo has purchased the vast majority of the hardware that it was unable to develop domestically from US companies. That reliance on the US limited Japan's choices, Malloy said, particularly when it comes to systems that are the most appropriate fit for Japan's defense concerns. So they're shifting away from that dependence on the US. They don't want to be dependent on the US either. So Europe is shifting away from that 70-year-old alliance with the United States. Japan, at the same time, is doing exactly the same thing. This is what we're seeing, a once-in-a-several-generation shift in global alliance structures, in the world order, you could call it. And the article points out how Europe and Japanese weaponry are kind of both advanced, but in different ways. They're both high-tech powers, but they generally have, or at least their defense sectors, tend to have different areas of expertise. And if you start combining them, you can start getting some very powerful potential weapons. Talked about combining Japan's communication technology with Europeans' noise suppression technology when it comes to making advanced submarines, or combining different parts of their air-to-air missiles to create what Deutsche Welle called a world beater. So you have Europe drawing closer to China, Europe drawing closer to Japan, and there's a third trend that we've seen recently that kind of completes this triangle, and that is Japan and China drawing closer. And these two have tended to be traditional enemies, staunch enemies. Japan is often considered one of the foremost enemies of China. And I'm not saying that everything is all, I don't know, roses and chocolates between the two of them. I think it's not going to be a hugely harmonious relationship. But these two are undeniably drawing a lot closer together. We had an article on our website by Tyrell Schloter on July 18th. Titled, Japan Uses G20 to Improve Relations with China, Russia. And he wrote that Japan doesn't have many friends in Asia these days. Its history during World War II, together with its current territorial disputes, have isolated the nation. However, Tokyo has made great efforts over the past few months to heal old wounds and become more involved with its neighbors, particularly China and Russia. He writes that Chinese-Japanese relations have been tense at best since World War II and have at times come close to open conflict. A bit further down, he writes, however, relations between the two have taken a huge step forward, particularly in the last few months. The latest sign in that relations are beginning to thaw came on July 8th at the G20 summit, when Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe sat down with Chinese President Xi Jinping for 40 minutes to discuss how the two nations could cooperate. Following the meeting, Abe unexpectedly announced his intention to cooperate with China's One Belt, One Road initiative, an infrastructure project aimed to better connect Asian markets to Europe and Africa. So you see Japan getting involved with China's initiative to draw closer to Europe. This initiative to bring trade from China and Europe closer together. Now it's looking like it could have Japan involved, Japanese involvement, trade from Japan and China and Europe. The Tyrell went on to point out that this was the first time that these two leaders have met in nearly a year, and that it was the accumulation of months of meetings between high-level officials. Following the meeting, Shinzo Abe, he said that the project has potential. He said that we hope the initiative will contribute to regional and global peace and prosperity by adopting ideas held by all in the international community. We want to cooperate in this respect. He also talked about how he wanted to have a summit between Japan, China, and South Korea at the earliest possible opportunity. So, and really, Japan is in a very similar situation to Europe. They're drawing away from the United States, becoming skeptical of their relationship with the United States. And so they're looking around for other partners. And you see Europe looking at Russia, looking at China. Japan is doing the same thing. And if they're not so strongly welded to the United States, they can't afford to be completely hostile to Japan. I'll just quote from one other recent article on this subject. And again, I think this was from Friday in the Daily Reckoning, called Japan's Shifting Power Alliances. It was by Nomi Prinz, they've been a managing director at Goldman and Sachs, senior managing director at Bear Stearns, worked at Lehman Brothers and Chase Manhattan. She writes, I've just wrapped up a long trip to Japan. And I've taken away one lesson from all my conversations, speeches, and researches. The rise of nationalism in the US will cause massive shifts in global trade alliances. So again, the entire global system of alliances is changing. One of the main beneficiaries, she writes, will be Japan. Now, Japan might not be on your radar day to day, but it's about to play a very important role in the world of Donald Trump. She writes that Japan is well positioned to benefit both from existing alliances with the US and growing ones in the rest of the world, particularly with China and the EU. She writes Japan stands to benefit both from, well, it says basically the same thing, from existing relationships with the US and its involvement with China, the EU, and other regional agreements. And she goes on to talk about some of those specific agreements there that they have. But why are we so keen to watch these new relationships between these powers? Why is it so interesting to see Europe, China, and Japan forming this new trade relationship? What effect is it going to have on Britain, on the United States? Well, as I outlined at the beginning, as we've kind of emphasized a few times as we've gone through this, this is a complete change in the post-World War II world. I read those quotes at the start, warning that an alliance between Europe and Russia could be a threat to the United States, or that a united power in East Asia. This was something that Spykman warned about. Either a Japan that dominates China like they did in World War II, or vice versa, or an alliance between the two. If you have a strong alliance in that region, that can threaten the United States. That will threaten the United States. And we read several quotes about that, about the warnings about powers in these regions, alliances from these regions, from top experts in foreign policy, warning that this could threaten the United States. So it's a very important trend to watch. As Spykman said, it's really, when it comes to world events and America's security, it's the most important trend to watch in peacetime. But much more than that, this exact relationship is prophesied in your Bible. If you're not maybe a regular on this show, you may not be used to the notion of using Bible prophecy to look at world events. And if that is you, it may sound very unusual. In today's society, it is very strange to look into the Bible for a description of the current world. But before dismissing it out of hand, bear with me a few minutes and look at just how detailed and accurate These prophecies in the Bible prove at describing our modern world. And we'll finish off today's program just looking at one specific prophecy that is found over in Isaiah chapter 23. Now, like all the prophecies in the Bible, it uses ancient or biblical names to discuss modern powers. It's something that can make it initially confusing and can be challenging to kind of work out, well, okay, which powers is it referring to? And I'm not going to have time to go through and prove that each power is who we say it is. But Mr. Gerald Flory, he wrote about a lot of this in his book, Isaiah's End Time Vision. There are other places you can go, and you can look on our website, thetrumpet.com, to get more proof to back up the modern identities of these powers. And as we discuss some of these things from this prophecy in Isaiah 23, remember that the latest edition of this book is from 2011. And actually, I think all of the material I'm quoting is from the edition of that book that came the year before as well, 2010. This was all before people were talking about the EU and China, before people were talking about the growing trade relationship between Germany and China. This kind of close trade relationship between Germany and China is something that really started to take off in around 2012, 2013. This is well before Donald Trump and the splits in between Japan and America and the splits between Europe and America. And this rise in, or this European-Chinese relationship, it's a common subject now. But back when Mr. Flory wrote Isaiah's End Time Vision, it was not at all. So we'll look at the start of Isaiah 23. We'll just read that first verse because it mentions several powers specifically. It says, "The burden of Tyre, how you ships of Tarshish, for it is laid waste, that there is no house, no entering in. From the land of Kittim, it is revealed to them." So right from the start, this talks about three powers. Well, who are these powers? Who is Tyre? When you're talking about the modern world, what is it talking about? Anciently, Tyre was a city in part of Phoenicia on the eastern coast of the Levant there in the Mediterranean Sea. But who is it now? Well, in the book Isaiah's End Time Vision, Mr. Flory wrote, "The spiritual center of the Holy Roman Empire is called Babylon in your Bible. But here in Isaiah, the Bible refers to Tyre and its allies in Zidon, and they're mentioned a bit further down, as the commercial center of the European power. So Tyre, that great ancient trading center, is a type of this modern European commercial power that we see rising. And that, again, is something that you can go, and we do have more things that talk much more about this rising economic power in detail, and you can search for that on our website. I'll just mention we do have a new improved search function that does a bit better of searching for articles and allows you to search by author or within specific dates as well. So Tyre is talking about a European commercial power, and then it mentions ships of Tarshish. In verse 6, you can see that these ships of Tarshish are from the Isle. You see the same thing in verse 2, talking about you inhabitants of the Isle. So it's implying that these ships of Tarshish, they belong to an island people. And Mr. Flory wrote in this book, "Herbert W. Armstrong's Ambassador College taught for over 40 years ago that Tarshish is Japan in Bible prophecy for today." So this verse is referring to the supertanker fleet of Japan. Even in the 1980s, you could see one of these tankers every 25 miles on the high seas. The Japanese are inhabitants of the Isle or islands of Japan. And already you can see Japan is known for being a major maritime power, just like this power described in the Bible. And then it goes on to talk about the land of Kittim or Chittim. Who is them? Who are they? Well, again, Mr. Flory writes in this book, "To which modern nation does this end time prophecy apply? This biblical name refers to both the island of Cyprus and to the nation of China, whose progenitors the first populated Cyprus gave its name." Or whose progenitors first populated Cyprus and gave it its name. So, and then there's a whole section in there talking or proving and going through, or who does Kittim refer to in Bible prophecy, that's a few pages long or a couple of pages long in that booklet. And again, you feel free to we'll talk more about where you can get it, but feel free to go and look in that booklet and prove that for yourself. So we see three powers mentioned here: Tyre or Europe, Tarshish, Japan, Kittim, China. And verse 3 goes on to talk about these powers and says she is a mart of nations. It talks about These powers, it talks a lot about the Great Trading Mart, a group of nations that trade together. There's a lot over these verses about, like you see in verse 2, pass over the sea. Verse 3 talks about great waters or oceans. Verse 8 talks about merchants. All across here, and almost every verse, it talks about, again, traveling over the strength of the sea, people over traveling over the sea. So all around here, it's all about a trading power, a trading relationship. It talks about a mart of nations and then a great amount of overseas trade going on between these powers. So these verses in Isaiah 23 are talking about a great trading alliance, and a great trading alliance that includes Europe, China, and Japan. And they single out specifically these three powers coming together and having this mart of nations, this trading alliance. It may well include other powers. Other parts of your Bible talk about China and Russia, for example, drawing closer together. And so Russia will probably have a part in this. And it's probably not mentioned because of the two. China is kind of the big commercial power, much more so than Russia. And so, as I said, we see these three countries singled out by name. Mr. Flurry wrote about these three countries having this trade relationship in the Isaiah booklet back 6-7 years ago. And right now we see these same three powers forming a trade relationship as they split from the United States. These great geopolitical experts that we quoted at the start, they all warn that that is a dangerous development. These powers threatening the United States. And the ability that these three powers would have to threaten the United States, these powers as they form alliances. And Mr. Flurry in the Isaiah booklet, he talks about the deep ties that Europe has with Latin America. And then he goes on to write, with a German-led Europe possessing a great maritime power, North America will be surrounded on the east by Europe and the south by Latin America. The Bible contains many prophecies of the European power attacking America and many other prophecies of America being besieged. That is where China and the giants of Asia enter the picture. When the Holy Roman Empire, this European power, attacks North America, there will be no help or sympathy from Asia. In fact, considering that China has come to possess most of the world's strategic sea gates, which ironically at one time were held by Britain and America, we believe there may be a brief alliance between the German-led Holy Roman Empire and certain Asian powers, Russia, China, Japan, the kings of the East. Should Europe, the resurrected Holy Roman Empire, find a way to take advantage, even for a moment, of the key resources and strategic holdings of China, Russia, and Japan, it would have more than enough power to besiege the Anglo-Saxon nations and enslave them. This is why, Mr. Flurry writes, Isaiah's prophecy of an end-time mart of nations that includes both European and Asian powers and so intriguing, and why the trend of collusion between these two great economic blocks is worth watching. And it is worth watching, and look how fast things are moving. Look how specific and accurate this prophecy has proven. It talks about three powers. It focuses on three powers specifically, Europe, China, Japan. And what do we see right now? We see Europe, China, Japan drawing closer economically. How much longer will it be until this trading relationship between these powers is fully formed, when we can already see this alliance in the Bible coming to life? Looking at this one prophecy in detail, it should convince us to pay attention to what the rest of the Bible says about modern times, about the time that we live in. And this is just one prophecy of the Bible that has some powerful warnings for America, for Britain. You heard in that quote that I read from Mr. Flurry that the Bible contains many prophecies of that European power attacking America, many other prophecies of America being besieged. And already we see one part, or the initial stages of this mart of nations being fulfilled exactly as it is in your Bible. It's only a matter of time now before the rest of those prophecies are fulfilled. And again, if you look at what some of these experts from the field of international relations or strategic policy are saying about the dangers posed by a power united in Europe, or an alliance of East Asian powers, they say as well, there's the potential for them to cut off and strangulate America economically. there's danger for them to turn against America. So you're seeing what the Bible says aligning exactly with what you see in the world today. So these prophecies, they do contain major warnings for America, for the United States. But then there's also a huge amount of good news and hope in learning that you can rely on what the Bible says. We'll look at one more scripture quickly, Matthew 24, one that Mr. Flurry mentioned to the campus in his Bible lecture this morning. That's Matthew chapter 24 and verse 22, one quote a lot on this show, which says, "And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved," or as the Moffat translation puts it, no flesh to be saved alive, making the meaning a bit more clear there. "But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." There are a lot of Christians out there who say they believe the Bible but don't want to talk about prophecy, even though you have books like the book of Isaiah saying this is written for the last days. And Mr. Flurry, in that Bible lecture this morning, he mentions he often uses this verse on the radio and this chapter on the radio because these are the very words of Jesus Christ talking about prophecy. And you know, we can't, if we're going to believe what Christ said, well, we can't get away from the subject of Bible prophecy for the last days. This is right from the mouth of Jesus Christ. And he's giving these prophecies. And so there's sobering news there, a time coming where man would come close to wiping himself out. But once you've proven that you can really rely on the Bible and Bible prophecies, well, then you can rely on the next part of that verse as well, that those days shall be shortened, that man is not going to wipe himself out. And then there's a whole host more prophecies that from the Bible that are just full of hope, great hope, not just for people living now, not just living for those that survive the time ahead, but for everybody that's ever lived. Now, to learn more about anything we've talked about on this show, you can write for our free book, Isaiah's End Time Vision. It's dead easy to order that on our website. You just click on the literature tab at the top right. It's completely free. The postage is free. We'll ship it. I think we ship just about anywhere in the world. I know we've even sent material to people in Iran. I think in that case, we have to make sure it's in a plain envelope to make sure it gets through. But we're happy. We want to give this book to you. So wherever you are, you can go on our website. You can order a copy. And you can get more detail into the prophecies that we've talked about into the show. You can prove a lot of this for yourself instead of just taking my word for it or taking the word for what I've said today. But then beyond just talking about those prophecies, it also goes into detail into the great hope beyond as well. The same book of Isaiah is just full of great hope for everyone that's ever lived. And then Bible prophecy, as we prove it true, it points us to the great God, and there is always supreme hope in that. Well, that's about all I've got for you today. I believe Mr. Stephen Flo will be back tomorrow with more updates from our youth camp here in the UK. So be sure to tune in tomorrow for that and to keep sending in your emails about your camp experiences as well.